Guy Thor is a gay activist, talk show host, and producer of One in Ten, the nation's first LGBT radio program on WFNX, where he's been a presence since 1997. And he's extended his expertise to the AIDS Action Committee, where they're getting ready for the annual AIDS Walk in Boston on Sunday, June 7th.
Hi, Keith.
Hi, Charlotte. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the AIDS Action Committee.
The AIDS Action Committee is New England's largest AIDS service organization. We were founded by Larry Kessler and a group of other activists in the mid-1980s, around 1986, in a response to the HIV and AIDS epidemic and the fact that there seemed to be no set sort of way to respond. An AIDS Action Committee really came into its existence in order to help the gay men's community and now all communities deal with and explore ways that they can live with HIV and ways that we can prevent people from becoming infected with new infections.
What inspired you to get involved with this issue?
Well, you know, I had so many close friends. Being a gay man now in my mid-40s, I came of age. I graduated high school in 1981, and in those early days of the 80s, so many of my friends, unfortunately, became infected with HIV. And I think it's hard for people who didn't live through that time, especially younger people, to realize just the amount of loss that went on and the amount of fear that was around as well, especially around HIV for our community. It's been something that's been very important to me for a very long time, and the more that I became involved with AIDS Action through the segments that we would do on the radio program for 1 in 10, the more it became evident to me that if an opportunity existed for me to help this organization, that it was a great place for me to be.
HIV remains still the number one health threat to gay men. What can we do to get the word out to the next generation?
I think part of it is there's this notion amongst many people that HIV is an illness that can be managed and can be sort of dealt with as a chronic illness. And while that is true with some incredible advances from the medical field, the thing I think that doesn't resonate with people is the fact that it's a disease that still requires you to have ongoing medical treatments for the remainder of your life. There are medications involved every day. One of the statistics that we cite over and over again is that with new infections of HIV, the average life expectancy is about 25 to 30 years. And that's fantastic, and that's wonderful to know that those folks are going to be able to have that time. But at the same time, the cost associated with it is about $1 million, $750,000 to $1 million, just in medical costs and medications, not to even take into account the notion of time lost from work or all of the other sort of ancillary things that go along with it. So I think for me, as what I try and do is impress upon those that are coming up behind me and to younger gay men, that while this is a disease that can be managed, it's a disease that should be avoided and can be avoided. And hopefully to spread the word about that is really important. You know, part of our mission statement here is to optimize the health of those living with HIV, but more importantly, to work as hard as we can to prevent any new infection that we can.
Are the 20-somethings still leading the stats in new HIV cases?
Well, it's interesting. There is an uptick there, and we're seeing, unfortunately, a large uptick in the younger African-American male community because there's a resistance to even identify as gay. In fact, there's a new medical terminology that we use around it here at AIDS Action, which is being used by many organizations, which is MSM, or men who have sex with men, because they would never sort of identify as a gay man. So I think for some populations, yes, it's definitely on the uptick. But we're also seeing a huge increase in new infections amongst gay men who are in my age bracket, who are in their sort of 35 to 50-year-old age bracket, guys who I think in some respect may feel as though that they've either become fatigued around safe sex or safer sex, or feel as though that in some way, shape, or form they may have dodged that bullet the first time and feel as though that the level of risk that they're engaging in is acceptable enough. And unfortunately, we are still seeing new infections in my peer group population as well.
Tell us about the AIDS Walk in Boston for 2009.
Well, it's an annual event. AIDS Action Committee is one of the first organizations, AIDS service organizations in the United States, to organize an AIDS Walk in days when it was very scary and unpopular. It was even hard for us to find sponsors at the time when the first AIDS Walk was put on. We're now in our 24th year of having people come together. It's about 15,000 to 20,000 people that come together on the first Sunday in June. We start off from the Hatch Memorial Shell and do a 10K walk. And the notion behind it is, although it's a fundraiser for our organization and we ask people to pledge at the same time, it's a way to reflect and remember about those that we've lost. So although there are many walkathons for many organizations, and they all do great work, and we love our friends at Project Bread, we love our friends at all of the other community walks that take place, this walk has a little bit of a different feel to it because it's not just about raising money or raising awareness. It's also about remembrance.
Could you share with us some of your personal stories that really moved you since you've been involved with AIDS Action Committee?
We've seen so many different stories. Around the walk, we've seen people that return to us year after year after year. We have a mom whose name is Betty Burns who lost her son John many years ago, and Betty is now in her, I would probably say she's in her late 60s or so, just an incredibly dynamic woman and really fantastic, and at the same time has become our lead fundraiser, has raised over $1 million in the course of her work for AIDS Action Committee since her son John passed to raise money, to raise awareness for HIV and AIDS. To see that story and to see Betty return to Boston, she's a snowbird now, so she lives, I believe she's down in Florida, but she always makes an effort and she's here every first Sunday in June to be here for the walk. That type of story is really moving for me. Or just to see everything from the folks, you know, we have a huge response from a lot of the elementary schools and middle schools in Massachusetts. One school in particular, the Brown Middle School, stands out for me because they make such a commitment with their kids to all be there and walk. And I think for them, it's motivational, but at the same time, they see these signs that people carry in the walk that remember those that they've lost. And I think it makes an impression and it draws the connection to them that really shows people that this is a human condition and this is a day of thoughtfulness around a disease that really tends to take people away from us at a time when they shouldn't be taken from us.
What are your hopes for our LGBT community and the Obama administration?
Well, we're so buoyed here, and I personally am so excited about our new administration. I think one of the things that we have is somewhat of a return to science in our thought process around this disease and around the way that we talk about it. But we also see a return to compassion as well. President Obama, while he was a candidate, was one of the first to sign on to a national AIDS strategy, which was this notion that we as a country, as the United States, when we deliver funding to other nations around the world to help combat HIV and AIDS, we require them to deliver to us basically a business plan, a funding proposal that tells us how they're going to spend that money and what they're going to attempt to do. Yet we here in the United States, even though we do that to transfer money overseas, had never had that policy or program in place here in our country. So we never had a definitive sort of set goal of what we were doing. It was piecemeal and there never really seemed to be an overriding framework that controlled what was happening. So we're seeing President Obama and his new administration really step right into the forefront of this with rapid appointments. Our executive director and President Rebecca Haag has been at no less than two major summits already at the White House in the first 100 days of this new administration to talk about health and human services and the response to HIV and AIDS. So we're seeing just so much more motion in that respect. At the same time, though, with an administration that's dealing with a myriad of so many other problems, and I think it would be so easy for them to backburner something like this or at least not pay it the strict amount of attention that they have. So we're very excited about our new administration and what we see coming out of Washington already.
What do you think about the health insurance issues that people are facing?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're working with here, one of the programs we have here is a program called HOC, Healing Our Community of Color. It's taking a look at barriers that especially women of color face when it comes to accessing healthcare. What this is a peer-led group where we have end users, folks that are in the medical system that are using services, talking with nurses and that are part of our organization about the problems that they face accessing healthcare. And then we're trying to return back to the medical community and share that with doctors and administrators at the various hospitals that we're associated with here in the greater Boston area. And it's just, the whole health insurance issue really just comes back to this, to one of access. We would love to see moving away from sort of a tiered version of healthcare where there's, you know, good healthcare for those that have insurance and sort of a lesser quality of healthcare for those that don't have insurance. And now with Massachusetts being the first state in the United States with mandatory universal healthcare, we're seeing some of the good things that that brings, but also the challenges that brings as well. We're seeing, which I think is really interesting, Charlotte, is that things like there used to be the option if you thought that you had been exposed to a sexually transmitted disease, not HIV, but perhaps gonorrhea or another type of venereal disease, that you could go to a free clinic and you could present and they would test you. And if you were, you know, showing signs of that, they would give you the appropriate antibiotics or treatments that could help you remove that. the first question that we have now in Massachusetts, which is a good question but an interesting question, is who's your health insurance provider? And it's like, well, I didn't want to involve them. I'm really just here because it's a free clinic. And the notion of a free clinic is something that may fall by the wayside once universal healthcare comes into play, because there would be no need for it. So it's a double-edged sword in some respect, because we're seeing it as perhaps a barrier to accessing healthcare for some people, because they might be concerned about having their insurance involved in something like that. But at the same time, you know, obviously we want healthcare for all. So I think the growing pains around it are going to be very interesting, to say the least. And it's such an incredibly complicated, multi-moving part piece of machinery that it's a daunting task, to say the least, to take on healthcare.
In this economy, are you experiencing funding challenges?
We are seeing a little bit of funding challenge. We had seen some of this economic problem coming our way, and have been, in fact, our agency instituted a hiring freeze for all of our positions in the fall of last year. We knew that we were going to have some challenges around that. But the other thing that we've been seeing is that the corporate sponsorship aspect of what we do, the underwriters of our major events and things like that, obviously have less money to spend and are now looking to make more in-kind donations than actual cash donations, which are still wonderful. But that money often would underwrite many of the moving parts that made an event like the AIDS Walk go on. And while we're happy to have them along, we're seeing people that I think have a different economic means available to them realize that agencies like ours are going to be hard hit. So our individual donors, in some respect, are actually up a little bit. It seems as though that the donations are a little smaller, but there's more of them. And that's really nice to see in some respect, too. It's this notion that I think people understand that charity really is something that they can affect on a one-on-one basis. And I think that also came out of this election cycle with the Obama campaign engaging so many people on a grassroots level, and so many people making small contributions to the political process, realizing that a multitude of small donations can really have such a great impact that it's even more important than the biggies.
How can people contact your org to get involved with the AIDS Walk?
They can go directly to our website. They can just go to AIDSWalkBoston.org. They can become a registered walker there. They can make donations there as well. One of the other things that's really fantastic for us this year is that social networking on the computer has become so important. Things like Facebook and MySpace and all of these other websites. We've created an application for Facebook, so if you're a Facebook user, you can, once you become a registered walker, you can add an actual little button to your homepage on Facebook where people can make donations. And what we found is that people that have been longtime walkers that may have moved from the greater Boston area but still remember fondly their positive experiences at the walk and the good things that came out of it are now able to fundraise for us remotely. So it gives us the opportunity to have virtual walkers, if you will, all over the United States, people that are able to help our agency and help in the cause that we have here. So AIDSWalkBoston.org is your best resource. And if you have questions, just general health questions or questions about HIV and AIDS, I would direct people right to our agency website, which is AAC.org, which stands for AIDS Action Committee. And we have an extensive HIV healthcare library there, as well as access to all of our hotline numbers. We've got a tremendous staff of volunteers and staff that can help with really any question.
Do you have a statement you'd like to make about the AIDS Action Committee?
I think the AIDS Action Committee is really just an agency that's really based in caring for others. You know, Charlotte, we have about 2,500 to 2,600 active clients in our agency, and of those, 90% of them have an annualized income of less than $10,000 a year. These are people that really are in desperate need of so much help. Our agency has become such a social safety net in so many respects for people that are living with HIV and AIDS, that it just underscores to me the importance of the work that we do and all AIDS service organizations all across the United States, that these are folks that need the help and are so willing to work with us to make sure that they can get there.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through times like these?
For me, it really is just sort of, it's this whole notion of sort of personal responsibility aspect of HIV and AIDS is really one that is so important to me. And that's the thing that I just keep coming back to over and over again. And these stories of people that are sort of selflessness in their work around HIV and AIDS. But it really becomes, for me, the mantra is really sort of a do unto others type of thing. It's a, you know, there but for the grace of God notion of dealing with HIV and AIDS, and knowing that if that was a challenge that was presented to me, that an agency like ours exists, really would help me in so many respects. Just know that there were people out there, because the level of care and the level of concern that we see just from our staff members for all of their clients is really just fantastic.
Well, thank you so much, Keith.
Charlotte, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.